The pressure is a privilege. And so I thought that was really cool. Like when he said it, I was like, man, that is so good. Like the pressure that I have now today is a privilege. If you're a contractor under $5 million, listen to what I'm about to say because I know it will apply to many of you. Stop selling product, start selling people. You got to sell people on the vision of the company.
Hey, how's it going? It's Tim Brown. Yeah, this is the Better Leads Podcast. I'm with Hunter Ballou today. How are you doing, sir?
What's up, man? How are you?
Doing great. We're talking about contractor masterminds, and we're going to talk about transformational leadership, even when things are hard.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I know you've been doing leadership for quite a while now, but you also have a group of leaders that you work with. Can you give the audience who hasn't hung out with you a couple of times to get a little bit of context about what you've been up to?
Yeah, sure. So we have a conference, RoofCon, that Tim and his team have supported for several years now, along with a couple hundred other vendors that come every year, and then a few thousand contractors that come out and join us as well. And then we have a mastermind for contractors. We have pest control, plumber, roofers, interior remodelers, you know, people just in the contracting space that are a part of our mastermind. And we do retreats all over the country, all over the world, Costa Rica, Dominican Republic. Last year we went to Africa, Uganda. So we have fun, and really for us, man, we just try to build a community of people that are legacy focused leaders, or in other words, transformational leaders, as we talked about before the show. For me, legacy is everything, and just striving to leave a legacy that you're proud of.
Why did you get really into this topic of legacy? Like, what do you mean when you say that? And why is that so important to you?
Yeah, so back in 2015, I got the book. I don't know if you've got a copy of the book. I gave some away at RoofCon, but the book, I wrote it. It's called Make It Count. And in 2015, it was actually September 17th, 2015. I was still working at the fire department full time. I was 24 years old. One of my former partners at the fire department was 30 years old. He was on his way into work, a guy running from the cops, crossed over four lanes of traffic, hit him head on, killed him instantly. He had a baby girl that's 4 months old, a wife, and he was gone. And for me, that was the first time in my life, like anybody watching this probably can relate, that like you've had somebody that was gone too soon. We hear that phrase, gone too soon. It's one thing to lose like a grandparent that's 80 years old. I had lost my grandpa that was right at 70 years old, and I was really close to him, really, really close to him. But it was almost expected because he was that old and started to get sick and things like that. But for me, Jordan, when he passed away, man, it hit me hard. Like it was a foundational moment in my life. So I made a promise then to make every day count. And so that was September of 2015. In December of 2015, I stepped away from the fire department to kind of chase those entrepreneurial dreams that I had. And so legacy just became this recurring theme in my life of like, Jordan didn't get the opportunity to continue living his life and work towards that legacy. So for one, his legacy is enough. His legacy lives inside of me and my mission, and I'm going to continue to carry it on. But everything I do, every decision I make, I try to do it with legacy in mind. So when I say legacy focused leadership, the way I explain that is it's simply leading with legacy in mind, is making decisions today where you might not even get a result for 100 years from now. This podcast is a great example, Tim. This podcast is a great example. We might get 300 views on this podcast. We never hear any feedback, but 100 years from now, it might still be on YouTube and a kid watches it and gets some inspiration and goes out and does big things and changes a group of 10 other kids' lives. So making decisions today that might impact people years from now. And to me, when I talk about legacy, it doesn't have anything to do with money or inheritance or finance or your name being on a building or football stadium or the sign in your local town. That's not it. It's just about the impact you'll make on people, whether they know your name, have seen your face, or any of that stuff. So for me, that's why I care so much about legacy and building leaders that are legacy focused. And when you, like we talk about the six bricks that I have, health, wealth, faith, growth, relationships, legacy. When I think about relationships, that's a big one. Like our industry is kind of known for having some shady folks in it. They go out and do some inappropriate things, whether that's drugs, addictions, being unfaithful to their wife. And like, that's not cool to me. You know, we really try to put together a community of high integrity people who are trying to do the right things and make the right decisions and lead with legacy in mind. And so it means that in every area of life.
Yeah, because sometimes I hear the word legacy, I think about like fame or like your name, maybe not fame all the time, but like your name on a hospital or something. Yeah, you know what I'm saying?
That's like, not legacy to me at all. Like, and I would challenge anyone who's listening to this, when you think about that, don't think of legacy in terms of tangible things. Like, that's not it. It's the impact that you continue to make after you're gone.
I like that. So we're thinking more about the way we treat each other. We treat people, we try to treat people right and make a small difference in one person's life in a positive way that can then carry on. And that's what you think about.
Yeah.
Okay, cool. I know that leadership and, you know, all these, there's a lot of hard things that go into leading people. And I know that's partly why you guys have the mastermind, the Revolt Mastermind. How many people are part of that, by the way?
We're probably right around 100. Well, I guess it depends how you look at it. Maybe somewhere 150 to 200 people, because we have women's now. Somewhere like that. Like our couples retreat last year, I think we had 150 people there. This year, we're expecting about the same. And we're actually making a big push. We just re-engineered Revolt. You know, it used to be like 30K to even get in if you paid in full. If you did like a payment plan, it ended up being like 43K. And we dropped it significantly. Like, it's a fraction of what it used to be, so we could reach more people. Now, we took out some of the higher cost deliverables and made those a la carte, but we made it much lower so more people could be involved and we could reach more people and build the community, because to us, that's what it's all about. That's why I started Revolt, man. It's like, I missed that camaraderie from the Marine Corps. I missed that camaraderie and community and brotherhood from the fire department. And so we started Revolt to create that community of legacy focused leaders, growth minded contractors who want to come together and be better and push each other and provide that accountability for each other.
I know. I like the way you said it on another recent show. Recently, you said that RoofCon is supposed to be the family reunion of roofing, yeah, and you want Revolt to be like the summer camp sometime.
Yeah.
Which I like that, because I love, I do love summer camp. I did love summer camp.
Dude, you got to freaking come to one of our retreats. When are you going to come?
I'm down. It's always timing. It's always like, because literally I've been traveling and I am going to something this next week that's kind of a mastermind type thing too. But like, I literally been like traveling. Like, I just made a commitment to my wife to, are like together. I'm like, she doesn't really actually care if I leave, but like a month at home. Like, I'm trying to do a month just straight at home, and that's tough. Yeah. I mean, it's cool. Honestly, when I don't know that necessarily roofers are always traveling or anything like that, but like when I guess salespeople and storm stuff, but you think younger, when you're younger, you're like, oh, wow, it'd be crazy if I got to travel all the time. And then when you do have to, and I think you do too, Hunter, right? You got to travel a lot. When you do have to, you kind of get into that spot where it's like being home for a couple weeks in a row feels really good.
Yeah, I remind myself often, I think I said this on a podcast recently too, because dude, I catch myself in that phase all the time. Like, Road to RoofCon is Monday. We're doing the show. It's whatever today is, the 17th. Road to RoofCon's April 22nd of 2024. So like next week on Monday, and I'm like, dude, I just don't want to go. I've been traveling. I've been on the road. I'm trying to cut back. And I have to remind myself, all these problems that I have now, problems are the things that I prayed for before. Like, I literally prayed for these problems. I heard another good friend of mine, R.D. Sanders, he spoke at a couple of our events. He's like the right-hand man to John Maxwell. He leads the nonprofit Equip for John Maxwell. And he told me one day, several months ago, when I was on the phone with him, he said, Hunter, the pressure is a privilege. And so I thought that was really cool. Like, when he said it, I was like, man, that is so good. Like, the pressure that I have now today is a privilege. A lot of people don't get this. Like, I asked for this years ago and now I get it. So I need to embrace it and look at it as a blessing. It's a privilege.
I like that. I just got the chills. All right. So how do you deal with tough stuff as a leader? Like, I know that you've had a couple years, a real couple of years, Hunter. Can you give a little bit of like, what happened this last couple of years and like what you, like, you know, how you're dealing with that stuff? Because I think it's been a couple of years since you've been on the podcast.
Yeah, man. It has been a wild couple of years. I don't know when I was on the podcast last. Do you know what year it was?
I think I was just looking at it. I think it was 2 years ago.
Okay, so like 2020.
We're talking about masterminds and stuff like that back then, but I think I just know that you've been through a lot.
Yeah, so 2021, just quick recap for anyone who doesn't know the story, which is probably most of you. In 2021, I had grown Cornerstone since 2017, so just shy of 4 years. I started Cornerstone in 2017, May of that year. Got pretty serious about it in early 2019. Before that, I was kind of part-time and had some people running it. We grew it, went through 2020, had a pretty good year, our first big year. Early 2021, someone approaches me about selling. We sell the company. It's to a public company trading on the stock market. When I say stock market, not like NASDAQ, New York Stock Exchange. It was OTC markets, you know, pink sheets. And it was trading there. It was good timing, if I'm being honest, because Biden had just taken office and the solar market soared. Like all the stocks were blowing up. So their stock price was going through the roof. They got a ton of capital to invest. They paid me a ton of money. It was a $48 million deal for Cornerstone. I got some of that in cash. I got some of that stock. We went about 3 months and I was trying to figure out like, what are all these companies inside of this portfolio doing? Who's who leadership wise? So I asked the CEO if we could do this leadership retreat and he says, yeah, let's do it. I said, hey man, if you don't think it's worth it, like I'll pay for it out of pocket. We do it. We go out to St. George, Utah, this retreat center we've used several times. We were out there last week for a revolt retreat and we do it. And it was great, man. We built out the org chart. We worked on mission statement, core values, a lot of the stuff that just wasn't defined for this overall company. And the next day that CEO came in and made me an offer to take over as the CEO of the entire thing, you know, in the moment. And the following weeks, I was pretty hyped and like pretty interested in doing it. We had a press release drafted, everything for me to do it. Like it's still in my inbox today. I still have it in there. And the night before the press release was to go out, he hits me back and he tries to renegotiate the deal. And the deal was the second deal, the renegotiated deal was just, it just didn't make sense. And it was actually going to be like me taking less than what I already had in the company and earning back in. And there were some things, some red flags, I felt like some liabilities and stuff that I didn't want to take those liabilities. And so everything kind of went downhill from there, man. They started saying, we're going to sue you. We're going to get out of the original deal, yada, yada, yada. And so they did. It took them a while till January of 2022 to actually sue me. And they did. You know, I'm a pretty stubborn dude, man. Like money, materialistic things, my truck, I drive a regular old F-150. Like I lived in a basic cabin for years. I got a bunch of land. Like I'm pretty simple. But when you try to smear my name and my reputation, I'm not cool with that. And like I'll put all the money and time and effort and energy I have to into defending my name because I've worked too damn hard. Like I talk about legacy and that's important to me, obviously. And so when these guys came after me and they made a ton of false allegations to try to get out of the original deal. And the reason they wanted to get out of the original deal is there was what's called a make whole provision. And all this is public. You could go research it. You could go look at the responses from the judge. You could go look and see what they had to say about what their allegations were. And some of them were just so simple that, you know, the judge could just look up stuff online and see that it was false. And so, yeah, like we get into the lawsuit, we go a couple of months. Basically I'm like, no, I'm not going to settle. We're going to go the distance. They make a great settlement offer. I say, no, they make another great settlement offer. And my attorney's like, hey, you should probably take this. Like you get to keep all the cash that you already had. You get to keep millions of dollars in shares and you get your company back and get to walk away from this thing and not keep paying us money as attorneys. Like it's probably a pretty smart deal. So we did that, man. And for me, like part of the reason I didn't want to settle in the first place was I wanted to prove all the people wrong that turned their back on me. Cause there were so many people in the industry that were buddy buddy with Hunter. Cause they wanted to speak at RoofCon. They wanted to come to the masterminds. They wanted to be at the retreats, all these things, buddy buddy with Hunter. And the second that lawsuit dropped, man, it was over. I missed that part. I skipped past it, but I was going to say that there's a make whole provision. That's all public. Like they were going to owe me in total 127 million shares in this company because the stock price had dropped so much from the time that I came in to that 1 year because the Biden administration and stocks started going down specifically for the solar sector and for SRC. So yeah, they wanted it out of that because they won't have to pay me all the stock. And so yeah, we went through that, man. A couple months in, I was like, you know what? That's a good enough settlement offer that if someone still thinks that those guys are right and I'm wrong, they're just morons. Like, they didn't do any research at all. And there was actually, like, you know, Dimitri and me, you could say, are kind of competitors, whatever, for many years. But like Dimitri and Adam Sand and some other people, I don't know if you were you on that podcast with Dimitri and Adam Sand when all that came out?
I wasn't, no.
There was a third person. I don't remember who it was. But
it was Steven Snyder from DreamWorks.
Maybe so. Yeah, I was very surprised, but I was very appreciative of like those guys to a degree having my back
down and, kind
and
of
telling people like, hey, you should go do your research. You know, like, it's not what it looks like. Anyone can make allegations. That's what, like, when people would come to me and be like, well, dude, look at all these things in this lawsuit. And I'm like, dude, I could go to the cops right now, or I could go file a lawsuit right now saying that you screwed your neighbor's goat. It doesn't make it true. It's just an allegation. And unfortunately, nowadays, like, the whole guilty or innocent till proven guilty is not true at all. It's complete opposite. But it was great, man.
I mean, and in some cases, you might be right.
Yeah. But if some cases,
yeah, I read a lot of it at that time. I was reading shit. I was trying to figure out, you know.
Yeah.
I don't know. Like, the way you're making it sound now in hindsight, it kind of sounds like none of the allegations seem that crazy to me. Like, I was reading through, like, I mean.
Oh, dude, I mean.
Reading through it, I was kind of like, this doesn't make a lot of sense based on what
they said. One of the allegations, and I hate even vocalizing this because I'd hate for anyone to ever think it's true, but it's such bull crap. And again, all this is public. Like, you could go look it up. They said that we were funneling money through our nonprofit. So basically, like, after they bought Cornerstone, they said, oh, well, they're taking money from Cornerstone and paying it to the nonprofit so they can keep getting paid. There was just stuff like that. There was like that one, because it involved my wife, like, they implied that my wife was involved, dude. There was many nights I laid in bed, sat in the shower, and thought about driving to California and doing some things I can't speak of on a podcast to this guy. Because that's just wrong, man. No, and I'm serious. It's not.
If there's a little bit of like an overarching, like, I hate to boil things down to a simple lesson here, but I think there's a lot of people going through mergers and acquisitions right now. I think there's a lot of private equity in the air. There's a lot of money being spent right on roofing companies, and like, there is, you want to make sure that there's some alignment on some. I'm not trying to like say you weren't doing.
No, you're right, and that's what I've tried to speak that message, and it's why I delete half the post in our Facebook group that are talking about M&A. You got people that are talking about M&A that have no clue what they're talking about, dude. We sold to this company before M&A and PE even stepped into the roofing industry and really started making a push. Like, people didn't even know about it. We were the first big one, press releases going out, Yahoo News, whatever, with public. And then when we bought it back, is how the deal was structured. We had private equity hitting us up nonstop. Dude, the first quarter of last year and the last quarter of 2022 was just nonstop people trying to get us to join forces and be a platform company. And a ton of the companies that are doing it now with some of the guys that we know in the industry. And so now these guys are coming to me like, oh, you should look at this. I'm like, guys, I talked to them a year ago, year and a half ago. And there's a lot of them I don't trust. I think that as much as they talk about doing your due diligence when you buy a company, it's equally or more important that you do your due diligence when you sell your company. Make sure they're in alignment with you. Make sure the earnout is structured in a way that you're protected. Like, there's so many things that you need to pay attention to. And don't freaking, there's people I'd love to name drop now, but I'm not gonna be mean. There's people in the industry, huh? Yeah, there's people in the industry trying to teach you M&A that don't know shit about M&A. Okay, like, just watch who you're learning from, because they don't know, and they all want you to come talk to them and use their partner. Guess what? Because they get a kick on the back end. I can't tell you how many people have come to me and asked me to send people their way so they can pay me a little kick. Dude, 10 grand, 40 grand, 50 grand to me is not worth it to send you to someone when I don't know how they operate truly.
Contractors love the catch-all because it makes every single one of their roof builds easier and more profitable. Protective netting wraps facade and landscaping to prevent from left-behind nails and damage. Homeowner referrals bring you more jobs, and insurance supplements bring you more profits. But my favorite part, the branding.
Yeah, and I think so. We're doing a new kind of like series on this podcast, the Private Equity Corner, because I like to pick everyone's brain on this particular topic. Because, and especially like, I get to have very smart people on, and one day I might sell my company. Like in 10 years, I might sell Hook. So, yeah. I really, and I'm getting to hang out with more and more people that have good offers on their companies and like old clients and stuff like that. Is so on the positive side of private equity, like there's a lot of money to be, and people get confused because they're like, if there's somebody's throwing a bunch of money at me, maybe it's a weird bad deal. Well, there are actually, they need to spend this money.
Yeah,
there's a lot of cash sitting around, and a private equity guy that's working for the firm or whatever, they don't get the 2% if they don't spend the money. If they let money sit there for longer than 5 years, then they don't get the money to spend. So there's good money to be had in selling your company. What would you say is like a good sign? Are there any good signs for private equity that you would say if somebody was coming to purchase you and they had these things in place, that it would be a good type of company to consider?
Yeah, I mean, less about the upfront, although I will speak to that. I mean, I think it's just like anything. It's just like when you're interviewing an employee, like you're trying to dig in and ask the right questions from the beginning. And this is something that if you're thinking about selling your company or even would consider selling it if someone approached you, be writing down these questions, interview questions for them, and make sure that they align with you. Of all the private equity guys that I've talked to in the last couple of years since they started inching their way into roofing, there's only been like one or two that I felt like I actually trusted and would align with and partner with. And for us, dude, I freaking love that gorilla in the background. I just saw that. Let's
I'm
go.
I'm so proud of it, man. Thank you guys for that.
And Show them that. Show them that. You should be proud of it, bro.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. We got the Ben Munchaco Award, and I think Hunter and team gave that to us because we were part of putting on a series of events over the course of a couple years ago that we did start a trend. There are a lot of like summer roofing tours now.
Yeah.
There was like three last year. I was like, oh, ew.
Yeah, Tim should be proud of that, man. That's literally the legacy award right there, in honor of Ben Machaca, and it's for the people who give back to the industry the most. So you should be proud of that. But anyways, sorry to cut you off. So yeah, man, I think just interviewing people, making sure that they align with your values. And then as you go through the process, be aware of this. And I'm going to tell you this now, because I have met with so many people, including myself. I've been through this in due diligence. And many of the people that I know, including Revolt members, they will come in and they'll make you some shiny offer with some big multiple, or they'll let you throw out your EBITDA and hey, it's at 5 million, but they're going to adjust it and they're going to get it down and they're going to beat that multiple down and they're going to give you every reason that they have to come down. Do not become emotionally attached to the deal until you have that final paperwork in front of your face and you can sign off on it, because they are going to whittle it down. It's the game. It is the
they
game.
They angle the carrot and then they whittle it down.
Yeah.
That's such a good mindset. Like just, oh man, I love that.
And it's hard to not, I'm not saying it's easy. Like it's not easy to be like, oh, I'm not.
You see the number up front, you're like, oh.
Dude, yeah. When you see 50 million and then all of a sudden it comes down to 30 million and 20 years ago, 10 years ago, you never thought you'd have more than $3 million in the bank. It's hard to turn it away. But just know that if they started at that higher number, you could be worth that to somebody. And if you're not, then you could certainly get to that point within the next couple of years. And everyone's different, dude. It's like if you're 65 years old and you're ready to get out of the game and 30 million is more than enough for you, okay. But you just need to know before you go into it, what is your number, and stick to that number. Don't bend and don't let them drag you along.
Absolutely. I know we got a number of different topics I want to cover. What are your top recommendations for recruiting? I think like to be a transformational leader, to be a legacy focused leader, even when things are hard, it's nice to have good people around. And how do you, when you start to get into that spot where you got to regularly recruit, what do you have as far as recommendations for that?
Yeah, so AI is awesome now. You know, like a lot of people just struggle with the basics of writing ad copy. And when I say ad copy, I don't even necessarily mean running paid ads. It could just be organic posts on your Facebook page, your personal or your professional. or your business. It could be inside of Facebook groups, whatever, but use AI to go out and write those job posts. Use AI to create roles and responsibilities if you don't have those, and continue doctoring that up. There's a lot of good stuff you could do there. Beyond that, you know, for us, and I've preached on this for years, so I'll keep it short. If people want more on this, they can go look up my stuff, and we have stuff everywhere. We have literally examples of showing you how to build a funnel, but building a funnel, man. Like if you're a smaller company, million, couple million, okay, you can afford to take the time and interview people one-on-one, because at this point, you're still trying to sell the dream and sell the vision to people. It's something I tell owners often, and if you're a contractor under $5 million, listen to what I'm about to say, because I know it will apply to many of you. Stop selling product, start selling people. Stop selling product and start selling people. You got to sell people on the vision of the company. It's a problem when you have an owner of a $2 million company and he's still out slinging roofs instead of selling that vision to recruits, to salespeople who could come in and multiply. That's the importance of what we're talking about, transformational leadership. Leadership is multiplication. Addition is, hey, I'm going to go out in the field. I'm going to go sell 5 roofs a month. Great. If I go get 5 sales reps to sell 5 roofs a month, now I'm at 25 roofs a month. That's leadership. So I think that's so important to understand the concept of multiplication over addition. So building a funnel as you grow, though, to whittle out those people and disqualify people. Having a video that talks about the job specifically. And on the front half of that video, I talk all about all the bad stuff. It's 1099. There's no benefits. You got a door knock. You got to climb roofs, yada, yada, yada. Whatever the bad stuff is in your company, say that. And then on the back end, sell them the dream. Tell them about the job. Tell them about the culture and the common mission you have and how you give back to the community and what the earning potential is and all the things. Next video is about the company. And then they go into the application. From the application, they do a phone interview, then an in-person interview. And by the time they get there for the in-person interview, it's basically just like, hey, what's your t-shirt size? And then just something a little more practical. Like if you're like, hey, I don't have the freaking time, I don't have the resources to build all this stuff out and do it myself. Dude that I've been using, Dan Wright, I use him personally in my roofing company. And then we have a ton of people inside of Revolt use him. I don't even know, like probably 15 or 20 of our members use Dan Wright. His company is called Cruder. So just hit up Dan, tell him I sent you. And I say that, like I don't get an affiliate commission or anything, but you can tell him I sent you and he'll hook you up. He I think his model now, I've been with him for a while, but I think his model is something like he charges you a retainer for the year and then a small monthly, or not small monthly, small fee per hire, every person you hire. And it's great, man. Like our company's been super pleased with him, and all the members inside of Revolt have been great. So just a plug for Dan, because he's crushing it and I appreciate him.
And I know on the story side, we haven't gotten to the malaria yet. So let's talk about that. And then like, just, I would love you to mix in principles of like how you dealt. Like, obviously you've got other leaders in place at your companies, but you certainly are value driving at your companies. Like when you come talk to them and when you come make systems or like upgrade something, it's probably pretty high value. So how did you deal with that when you needed to be leading, or you maybe you didn't need to be leading, but you like leading these companies?
Yeah.
How did you deal with the tough stuff while leading?
Yeah, man. So malaria was not only bad because it was malaria, and then I ended up getting E. coli too while I was in the hospital. But you know, it went from the lawsuit that season to I lost over $1 million at RoofCon 2022. We had that hurricane hit that year. Our attendance didn't do nearly what we thought it was going to do. We had 3,400. We were expecting over 4,000. And it hurt us, man. So there was like a large, long season of doubt and guilt. Guilt from the Cornerstone transaction to where I sold it and it felt like I sold my people. And then it started going south. And then I really felt bad. And that went through end of 2021 through 2022. Then end of 2022, we have RoofCon to lose the money. Now there's a bunch of doubt because I'm like, oh my gosh, I'm losing all this money on this event. Are people going to come back? Is it going to go downhill? Whatever. And then you go into 2023 and you know, end of Q1, like spring of 2023, I'm starting to think like, okay, I got to figure something out, dude. Like I need to find some inner peace. and not to get all woo-woo here, just like it's a real thing. Like I was not enjoying it. Like I was not super happy. And so I was like, but I was aware of that. And so I was searching for it. And so I continued searching for that through 2023. And it felt like I was incrementally getting better for sure. It was not stressing about 2023 RoofCon as much as I thought, which we had put Diego into place to run it. He freaking crushed it. The team crushed it. It did awesome. Had great people like you and so many other vendors come back and be a part of it. The attendance was great. But leading into that, we decided to go to Africa for this mission trip and business conference we put on and spoke at this conference. And I don't remember what night, like third night, I think, that I was out there. I woke up at like 3 a.m. and I couldn't sleep. I don't know if it was time change or just I was meant to write this song or whatever, but I wake up, I can't go back to sleep. I'm in a room with Dylan Mullins, if you know who Dylan is. He's the redheaded mullet guy. And I'm in a room with him, and I just get up. I didn't want to wake him up, so I went outside, and I just start writing. And I don't know anything about music, dude. Like, I can't play anything. I can't sing, nothing. But I've always enjoyed writing and poems and being able to rhyme and stuff. And so I start writing this song, and I'm pumped. I'm excited about it. And, like, 7 o'clock comes around, and I know they're going to be getting up for us to leave. And so I run up, and I grab Joey, which is, do you know J.P. Wilson out of Ohio, Patriot Contracting? I go up and grab his media guy. He's like a worship pastor back home. And I had written this song, and it's like a kind of like a worship song. It's called Need You Now. And so I'm like, Joey, can you help me put this song together? Like, I don't know the bridge, chorus. I don't know how that works. Can you help me? So we put all this together. And then the last night we were there, we had this group of 5 Ugandans that were like the worship team at all the events we were going to. And so they did like 3 takes, and on that 3rd take, we recorded it. I have it. It's freaking awesome. They do the whole thing. We finish. We start praying. And, dude, I had only seen mosquitoes 1 time, and it was earlier that night at a restaurant. And we're sitting down, and there's candles, and they're all flying above us, but they weren't landing on us. Good. We go to pray after I write that song. We sing it. We record it called Need You Now about God. And we start getting bit by mosquitoes. We're outside, and it's like 3 a.m. in the morning that we're out there. We have a flight a few hours later. We're about to head to the airport, actually. And yeah, we're out there, and I'm in my flip-flops, and we're kind of back and forth, kicking our feet, mosquitoes landing on us. Get home, don't think anything about it, dude. And then me and J.P. Wilson, sure enough, same day, 2 weeks later, so 2-week incubation period, get super sick. I was in the middle of Fearless 44, that challenge we have. And yeah, man, it was bad. And thankfully, thank God, we had another Revolt member who has an orphanage in Uganda who saw me on Facebook Live and just my face and how pale I was and just everything. I'm sweating, feel horrible, can barely move. And he's like, dude, I think you have malaria. You need to go get checked. And I'm like, no, it's not a big deal. I don't think I have malaria, whatever. Another day goes by. He reaches out again. I just shrug him off. He's like, you need to quit being active and doing Fearless 44. He calls my wife, tells her. And, dude, it just got so bad. I just remember laying in my shower with we got this big old shower with a couple of shower heads. And I'm just there shivering, man, with hot water on me trying to get warm. And my wife finally was just like, hey, we're going to the hospital. Like, I'm calling them. And so went in. Sure enough, malaria. We went into, like, the local little hospital here close to my house. And nobody there had ever seen it. So they treated me. We did the time there. They tell me I'm good. I leave, think I'm good. Never really feel better. About 2 weeks, a week, something like that goes by. And I start getting bad again. And this time it's worse. And mind you, the first time we went in, they said that we went in on a Wednesday. They said, hey, we waited until Friday, our wives would have found us dead. Now, I don't know how true that is, but that was what was said by the doctor. So, like, it was pretty bad. And the second time, it was worse. And the second time, my symptoms were way worse. It was like every sickness you could have combined. And they're like, we think you have something other than malaria. And sure enough, I had malaria and E. coli when I went back in. So it was a wild time, man. And just, you know, what I really wanted to say, I guess, on here is when you have those moments of questioning, could it all come to an end? Could I die in this moment, in this bed? Could I not see my kids again, not do another trip, not get to watch my son and my daughter grow up and play sports? Could I never lead another retreat? When you start thinking about those things, the lawsuit, the losing the money on RoofCon, all that stuff that was in my head and created guilt and doubt and yada yada, none of it mattered. None of it mattered. I was just thankful to be alive. And then after that, thankful to start getting healthy and feeling better. And I still feel like I've been battling one injury after another. I think my immune system's just still kind of shot. But so thankful, man. Like, I went into RoofCon with the most peace I've ever had. If you look back, if you go to my profile on Facebook and you click on the banner picture, it's me and my little man at the father-son retreat last year. And he's in front of me leading push-ups for our group, and I'm behind him. If you scroll back one picture, it is a picture of me and him at RoofCon 2022. It's us watching Tim Tebow. I've got my hand around him, and he's looking up at me smiling. And you can see my tongue is in my cheek. I didn't even know the picture was taken. When Williams, my videographer, when he sent me that picture a week or 2 weeks or whatever after the event, dude, I got super emotional. I broke down because I remember the pain in that picture and feeling like a piece of crap, that I had failed everybody, that I had failed the vendors, there wasn't enough people there, we were losing money on the event, everything. It just felt so bad. Meanwhile, you have all these people, attendees, vendors, people coming up, speakers saying, oh, dude, you hold it together so good. I don't know how you're not stressed at these events and da-da-da-da-da, all these things. Meanwhile, on the inside, dude, I felt like the biggest piece and felt like I wasn't good enough and that I failed everybody. And you see that picture of me tongue in cheek, and I'm just like so disappointed in myself and wondering how all this happened.
Yeah, but you're happy though.
But that's where I'm going. But you look at Turner, and he's happy as he can be. He's proud of dad. He's happy to be there. He's listening to Tim Tebow, enjoying life in Orlando, getting to swim in the pool, has no clue any of that's going on. And just to think about the joy of a child, you know, that is a very pure and beautiful thing, man. And that's exactly where I was going with that. Is you look at Turner and he's happy, he's looking at me while I have all this doubt inside of me. And so that picture means a lot to me right there.
Hey guys, this is Bruce Badon. And when dealing with insurance companies, you definitely need an expert by your side. So if you need someone to walk in, hold your hands throughout the insurance process, not really, Max. Build the experts, supplement experts.
You can hold my hand.
Yeah.
It's really beautiful. You know, all these difficult things as a leader that you go through, and it is often lonely at the top, as they say, or there's a lot of things that maybe some people couldn't relate to you that work at your company is something to think about. And that's one of the reasons, like, these contractor masterminds like Revolt are really, really good and important for people. As a transformational leader, you've got to continually kind of upgrade yourself in a way, or at least like get better or not stay in a rut. Like, because I think the most obvious thing is burnout, right? You get burned out sometimes as a leader, and you have to go out on your own. What do you recommend for like leaders doing some soul searching?
Yeah, man, I love that. So for me, obviously, I just talked about that long season. It was like a year and a half, a tough season for me, every bit of a year. And back in the day, I used to do a lot of camping, getting out in the wilderness, some solos out there by myself. And so this year, I committed to doing that again and doing one, what I call a solo, just one solo per quarter. And so I did that in January of this year, and it's just 24 hours. You go out in the wilderness by yourself, no technology. You just take the necessities, you know, a lighter if you want to start a fire, your tent, your sleeping bag, an MRE, some water, the basics, nothing crazy, no technology. That's a big point. Pen and paper. And just for one, just brain dump. Just write. There might be some relationships that you want to mend. There might be some relationships that are soured and you want to write them a letter, and maybe you need to apologize. Maybe you don't need to apologize. You just want to talk to them and let them know your perspective. Maybe this sounds crazy, but I've had people do this at retreats. We've done this exercise. Maybe you need to write a letter to someone that's already passed on and that relationship ended sour and they're gone now. And you just need to brain dump and get it off your chest somehow. And that's the time to do it. And so I have this structure that I built out while I was out there. It's just a framework. And so I can kind of go through that real quick. Number one is reflection. When you get out there, it's just reflection. Like, you're just thinking about your life. You're thinking about all the things that you've been through and your health, with your marriage, with your children, with past relationships, partners, employees, whatever. Just reflect. Think about life. Maybe it could be anything, money related, health, anything. but just brain dumped. Most of the stuff I try to do is structured around the six bricks, which is health, wealth, faith, growth, relationships, and legacy. But brain dump, reflect, and just put it on there. Then when you dump all that you can think of, and like you have 24 hours, so there's no rush here. You're going to continue to add stuff. After you do your reflection, then you move on to conviction. And I want you to think about the areas that you're convicted. And so one of those, you know, could be, hey, I've been reflecting. I know I've been saying for 3 years I was going to quit smoking or quit vaping or quit drinking at night when my kids are watching me or whatever it is. You've been reflecting on this, thinking about it. What are you convicted about? What do you actually need to change? Because that's a real thing. You need to find the conviction. It needs to be a burden. Like, you got to feel bad about it enough to make the change. It could be weight loss. It could
maybe
be.
Could we burn this one after we're done in the fire over there?
Yeah, you could. But whatever you're convicted about, you're going to write down. And then from there, it's vision. Like, what is your life vision? Because what I find, man, with most business owners, and this just happened at our members retreat 2 weeks ago in Utah, the women's retreat last week in Utah. I know that some of the ladies did something similar to this, but when we think about our life vision, a lot of times we're not living the vision or moving towards the vision that we set from the beginning. We kind of lost our way. We forgot about it. Now, if it was intentional, if it changed on purpose, that's okay. But if you started with pure intentions, if you started for freedom and because you wanted to help people and impact and yada yada, don't get lost along the way and make it about impact or proving people wrong. Because I can tell you, for me, like when I started, there was really like three main reasons I started in business. I wanted to prove people wrong because my parents were drug addicts and nobody believed in me. And I wanted to prove people wrong that I was going to be a millionaire by 30. I wanted to make a lot of money, be a millionaire by 30. And I wanted the freedom. That was the really, really like the only noble one. So why did you start? Why are you doing it now? Sometimes we need to correct that. So like, just put down what your vision is for your life. And I'm talking like impact goals, income goals. You can put materialistic goals. Like, what are the things that you want? And that may be coming up with a vision board that you're going to make later. But what are the things that you want? What are the things that you want for the relationships with your kids? Like, are you going to do a weekly night with them or a monthly night with them? Are you going to do a quarterly getaway with your wife? Like, think deep. What is the vision for your life? One of the big ones, man, that I could tell you, and this is like some deep stuff that I was thinking on while I was out there, is for me, I thought to myself, what did I want from my parents that I didn't get? Like, for me, growing up, and not to say I had the worst life by any means. I think my parents loved me and love me now. And, you know, I'm not saying I had the worst life, but it was not great. You know, they got into drugs and it was very embarrassing. We lived in a house full of mold and like literally a hole in the ceiling. And like, it was, I never once brought a girlfriend over. Like, it was embarrassing. And so I thought to myself while I was out there, what are the things that I wanted from my parents that I didn't get? Like, for me, my dad, as an example, you know, playing ball with me. When he came home from work, he was spent. He was the only one that worked. My mom didn't work. So he was like nonstop all the time working, trying to provide for the family, just scraping by. So when he'd get home, he didn't really want to go out and play much, you know, but that always hurt me. And something he told me so many times, man, and it still bothers me to this day. And I try to be mindful of this with my son. He would tell me, I didn't have a dad when I was growing up. I had to do everything by myself because his dad died when he was 13. He'd say, I didn't have a dad. I had to do everything. But to me, it was like, okay, well, if you didn't have a dad, why don't you change that for your son? But it was his excuse. It was his way of saying, hey, you can go out there and play by yourself because I did it. And so I try to think deep about these things. And what are the things that I freaking desired, man? I wanted so bad for my parents, but I just couldn't get it. So I can make sure I do give it to my kids. Now, here's the second part, and this is getting super deep for a podcast, like when people can't communicate back and forth. And if somebody wants to message me, we can talk through this. But the second part of this is, okay, so we think about what we wanted from our parents, but also what made me who I am. Because those answers are going to contradict each other, I bet, if you really think about it. A lot of the things that made me who I am today are the things that I hated when I was younger. Not having my parents around much, being doubted, people telling me I'd never make it. Those things are what made me so driven, man, and made me work so hard. Had everything been given to me, I probably wouldn't be as driven as I am today. And so then the follow-up to all this, the third piece of this is, okay, now that I've thought about those two things, how do I give my son the love and all that that I didn't get, but also give him enough pain so that he is driven and he wants to go out and make an impact? And so my answer to that, and I've got a 5-year-old and a 1-year-old, dude, so it's not like I have all the answers, but I'll tell you what I think my answer is to that. My answer is, you go and you let them see pain that other people experience. You take them on mission trips, you take them to a third world country, and you show them what life is like for other people. It ain't all freaking nice all the time. Like, we live in a nice house with a beautiful view and, you know, built out gym and jiu-jitsu mats he gets to play on and jungle gym and pool and all the things, bunch of land he can ride on, 100 acres. Not everybody gets that. He's got to experience that pain in another form to keep him humble, to have that humility, to be grateful so that he has that drive. And so vision for your life, next two, just to go through quickly because I went on there, next two are execution. So like after you come up with the vision, execution, what's the action plan? And then lastly, revolution. What happens when you execute? Like when you reflect and then you think about your convictions and you create that vision for your life and you execute on it, what's the revolution? What happens when that vision comes to life? What's going to change? How many lives are you going to impact? How happy are you going to be? How proud of yourself are you going to be? So those are the five pieces that I think about when I'm out there doing the solo.
By the way, I love the solo thing because I definitely have done that in the past and would like to get back to that, the little camping trips by myself.
Yeah. So
I really like that one. I love this this framework. We'll just pop that in the description as well, just so folks can kind of take those notes.
Yeah.
But you probably took notes anyways, since the people that watch this podcast or watch this stuff on our YouTube are usually high performers. I appreciate you being on, sir. And I appreciate what you're doing with Revolt. And I really appreciate what you're doing with RoofCon, the family reunion of the roofing industry and the summer camp of the roofing industry. Any other like call to actions you would have for folks here at the end to check you guys out?
I'm pretty simple, man. I mean, if someone wants to hit me up, I'm not on a ton of social media platforms. Like, I have profiles, but I don't use them. If you want to talk, Facebook, you can hit me, Hunter Blue. Just message me if you have any questions. We have that 8-figure checklist that we talked about. We have this new thing that is really cool. It's a 24-question test that I built out with scoring configurations and everything, called the Profit Booster Scorecard. And so if they take that, it'll score them in each area of business and then give them free training. And that's just therevolt.com/booster. And if you know, they don't remember that, they can just message me on Facebook and I'll give it to them. But yeah, man, happy to give any of those free resources. We've got the recruiting funnel. A lot of the stuff we talked about today, we have broken down into free resources we can give them.
Thank you so much for being on, man. I think of you as a transformational leader, and I'm grateful that you are bringing this contractor mastermind stuff to the world, because you know, the roofing industry and the contractor industry in general is modernizing, and is over this next 10 years is going to modernize pretty quick. But it's nice to be on the front end of that, not because we have to, because we have to compete with all these massive roll-ups and stuff like that. Like, so it's nice to be on the front of that so that we can be driving the innovation, not being reactive to it.
Yeah, love it.
All right, thank you, sir. Appreciate you. You have a good one. The podcast is put on by hookagency.com, Hook Agency all over social, and I appreciate you guys watching and listening. Please feel free to like, comment, and subscribe. See you guys later.